I am Reese Tisdale, and this is The Future of Water, in which we talk about all the ways in which companies, utilities, and people are addressing the challenges and opportunities in water. Today, we are celebrating The Future of Water, episode 52. I guess we're on a run here. The last episode, Build America by American, and the impacts of new policies on hardware and equipment procurement in the U.S. That was the topic. Today, we're going to talk something bigger and more global, and that is we're going to be looking at large-scale desalination project activity, ownership trends, and technology shifts. Why are we discussing this today? Well, the effects of climate change, population growth, and the rise of industrialization have played, I guess, somewhat of a role in water scarcity, or are impacted by water scarcity, and therefore their water demands are changing. And so what's going to supply that demand? Desal could be the solution. It also depends on where you are. A large number of the countries in Africa, the Middle East, and Asia are under serious freshwater stress. So desal is an obvious, if not a potential option for water supplies. And quite honestly, the Middle East is where a lot of this is happening. It all seems so simple. Just take seawater, turn it into fresh water, drinking water, and then using reverse osmosis, and then there you have purified water. But rather than hear me talk about it, we're going to have Bluefield analyst Isabel Kesman come on and join and talk about what is happening in desal globally. So that being said, let's jump into that conversation. All right. So I'm joined here by Isabel Kesman. Isabel, how are things?
Good. In Boston right now, but headed to DC this weekend to see some friends. So looking forward to it.
Nice. Late for the fireworks, but we talked about it earlier today. You feel that fireworks, all the money and time that's spent on fireworks could be used for other things, including saving animals' lives. But you didn't say that, someone else. So with that being said, let's jump into this. Let's talk a little bit of desal. Let's just set the stage a little bit. So on an ongoing basis, you and others have been looking at desal globally, really large-scale desal, looking at project announcements, M&A of assets, because there's a little bit of that happening, but also just associated details when it comes to desalination. So maybe let's step back a little bit. I'm talking about large-scale desal. I'm sure many of the listeners are wondering, what are we talking about? So why don't you sort of lay it out for us? What sort of facilities are we looking at? Have you been looking at? And what are your general thoughts on the market as a whole?
Yeah, so our data set looks at facilities that produce more than 50,000 cubic meters a day. So as you said, these are the large-scale gold-plated systems that you may have heard about in the Middle East, Australia, and to a lesser extent, the United States, namely the Carlsbad plant in California. We've identified 170 large-scale plants that are owned by approximately 130 different and unique entities. Cumulatively, these facilities have brought online over 33 million cubic meters a day of capacity between 1999 and currently.
So to follow up, Isabel, on that question, so, I mean, let's put it in perspective. Like, you're talking about 33 million cubic meters per day of capacity has been added since 1999. Well, what does that mean? Can you put that in some perspective?
Yeah, so we can actually use one facility, Acciona's Al-Khawar 1 facility in Saudi Arabia, as kind of a proxy. And so this facility went online in 2020, at the end of 2020, and produces 210,000 meters cubed per day, which serves approximately 350,000 people. So using a somewhat back of the envelope rationale, we're potentially looking at over 55 million people being served by that 33 million cubic meters a day of capacity.
Yeah, and it's not an exact science here in the sense that, you know, some of these plants we're looking at, let's say the Rio Tinto plants and or plant in Chile, it's really for a mining operation. Some of that water may go to local communities, but same could be said in Saudi Arabia as well. Some energy facilities are using water. But, you know, for as a proxy, I think that's a good way to put it, it seems like. So that's helpful. So, I mean, one question is the growth over time has been, I think, pretty steady, you know, over the last two decades, right? So I think we were, the numbers you've come up with look at about 6% compound annual growth rate over time. But where are we seeing the project activity?
So more than 78% of this large scale capacity has been commissioned in the Middle East, North Africa region. And in terms of market share per country, Saudi Arabia has about 23% and UAE has 19%. So really focused in the Middle East region. And based on the project pipeline, we think that these positions are likely to hold moving forward.
And most of this municipal industrial?
So most of the projects are directed towards municipal use or offtake. But in several instances, specifically in Latin America, we're seeing some projects with more industrial purposes, such as mining operations in Chile, among other countries. And Chile is somewhat unique in that, you know, the Pacific is right there, super accessible. But in many of the cases, the challenges with large-scale desalination here is pumping the water to an elevation in the Andes, where these companies and communities are present and operating.
And so I guess the lack of an elephant in the room, I guess, in the case of the U.S., right? We've got drought in the Western U.S. that's happening. You mentioned Carlsbad, which is Poseidon, I guess, is owned by Brookfield now in Southern California. What's the status of the U.S. market?
You know, given the drought conditions of the Western U.S., you'd actually expect to see more of these large-scale desalination plants are more in planning. But as we all recently saw with the rejection of the Huntington Beach plant permits, which have been under planning and in litigation lawsuits for almost two decades now, there seems to be a steady stream of resistance coming out of California, particularly due to environmental damage, concerns from brine disposal, and just the overall cost of the plants and the cost of water that will come from the produced water. So it seems like in the U.S., water reuse is a preferred method of meeting water demand. Reese, I think you know a little bit more maybe about the water reuse landscape if you want to.
Yeah, I mean, I would say it's exactly that. Water or reclaiming wastewater for reuse, so water reuse as we call it, is definitely cheaper. I mean, significantly cheaper. That being said, it still has to be managed. You need to find off-takers for it. You know, what we've seen in a place like Southern California, Carlsbad, right, is if it's supplying, you know, San Diego with a water supply, it's expensive water, certainly, but it also provides some insurance. We've also seen that in Australia, where, you know, after the millennium drought in Australia, they built up a number of desal plants. It was expensive, started raining soon thereafter. People went crazy. Well, guess what? They're back in a drought again, and that water is actually turns out to be somewhat valuable. So that's one aspect of it. You know, California as a whole, developing any large-scale project, and not just water, you could look at the power sector as well. I know from my own experience, renewable power developers face similar problems, whether you're looking at solar projects in the desert, you know, they're faced with confronting the famed desert tortoise, which is slowed project development. And so desal and its environmental impacts, but brine disposal, but also is it going to be, you know, it depends on the intake as well for the water, you know, is wildlife or, you know, sea life going to be impacted by it? And so ultimately it looks like after two decades, like you said, Poseidon has lost out on those permits. So what does that mean? One would think that there's the California reuse pipeline should continue to grow. Well, I mean, to that point, I mean, which reuse is not technology in this case. I mean, let's talk a little bit about desal technology. What have we seen over really the past couple decades? We're seeing a lot of activity, or we've seen a clear shift in technology choices by the desal players.
Mm-hmm. So the market has shifted from thermal desal or boiling water to reverse osmosis or RO technology. And so RO adaptation has absolutely surged over the last two decades, making up about 60% of the installed capacity. And when you consider the under construction and late stage planning projects, 92% of those projects use RO. So we're definitely seeing a dramatic shift towards reverse osmosis. And a huge factor in the switch was the deployment of energy capture systems, which reduced the energy consumption of desalination facilities. And this started up around 2005-ish, when one company specifically, Energy Recovery, also known as ERI, came out with their energy recovery devices, including pressure exchangers, which had, you know, a significant impact on desalination in general.
Yeah, we've definitely seen some, in retrospect, milestones, right? The switch from thermal desal, that's happened over time, and definitely in the Middle East, where a lot of these plants are huge, shifted towards RO. So, you know, the membrane suppliers have really benefited from that, whether it be LG now or 3M. These are companies that provide membranes. And the ERI, the energy recovery, was another big step, because one of the reasons desal is in fact so expensive is the energy cost associated with it. And so therefore, that's been a big focus. Now, whether there's another great leap forward, that remains to be seen. The bottom line is, and maybe this is the reality of it, is, you know, when you don't have any water, it's probably is going to be expensive. So, you know, take your pick. Desal might be the best and only solution in some cases. And that really is in the case of the Middle East, where we're starting to see some reuse. Desal is, as far as alternative supplies go, is huge. But, you know, when we really started looking at this at Bluefield, we started looking at desal. The first big report we ever put out was in 2013. One of the things we were looking at was who owns these systems, right? There is a role for private players. They're financed by private players. So you've done rankings and analysis looking at net ownership. What does your research and analysis show for these large scale facilities globally?
Right. So Bluefield has identified 130 shareholders in about 170 online installed capacity plants. The reality is that the top 25 system owners, which includes both public and private owners, have a combined ownership capacity of 23.5 million cubic meters a day out of that in general 33 million. So with this, we can see that the market is fairly consolidated amongst these top 25 players.
And the types of companies, so you mentioned public and private, but what are the type of companies or organizations that own these?
So there's a number of profiles, including public entities, which governments, government corporations, like the Saline Water Conversion Corporation in Saudi Arabia is major, and state-owned investment or sovereign wealth funds are another way that governments are keeping their share of the desalination capacity. And then we're also seeing Spanish, French, and Middle Eastern EPCs, Aqua Power from Saudi Arabia, Engie, and Acciona. And then the last kind of deck of players is the Japanese trading houses. So Marubeni, Sumitomo, and Mitsui are some of those that are building up their stake in plants outside of Japan, which is pretty interesting. They're gravitating towards the Middle East to get their share.
Yeah. And so one of the things as a result of these ownership stakes, we're also seeing a little bit of M&A. So is there much activity? I mean, we have companies that come to us periodically to say, hey, where are the desal plants? Where are the opportunities? We'd like to, in some cases, buy into this market. Can you provide some guidance? So are we seeing a lot of M&A?
Over the last 6 years, we saw about 1.7 million cubic meters per day of divestments from the 8 largest and publicly announced transactions. Among these was the cancellation of Acciona's ATL concession in Spain, which was repossessed by the Spanish government after 2 years, maybe more, of disputes. On the other hand, some noteworthy buyers include Aberdeen Standard Investments, which is a Scottish firm that actually now owns 100% of the Carlsbad plant in California, and Generation Capital, an Israeli-based company, which has carved itself a stronger position in some of Israel's desalination plants.
And one other, and I'll just throw this out there, and then what's the story with Hyflux, right? There's been a little bit of upheaval.
Yes.
Hyflux out of Singapore.
Yeah. Hyflux is a little bit in limbo right now. They're in a liquidation process after going into bankruptcy. And we're starting seeing some turnover of their plants to different stakeholders. One of them is Keppel Corporation, who had shared ownership with the Sing Spring plant in Singapore. And they now have 100% ownership. So they gained Hyflux's shares in that. And we're likely to see the other plants that Hyflux has shareholdings in be given bought by other investors.
I mean, what was interesting was, you know, back in the day, I say that with my own experience, and that is, you know, the pure play desal players, they're kind of few and far between now. Hyflux was one, IDE was another. IDE is kind of, they have a technology understanding they've applied to other types of water treatment projects around the world, and it's a really tough market to play in. So it is interesting, like you said, you've got the Japanese trading houses that are, you know, they're basically financial investors in these positions. You get the Spanish CPCs, you get a couple French players like Veolia or the Suez's of the world, or Angie's, that have positions. And then, you know, it's kind of few, and then the public entities, like you said. So there's a little bit of activity happening in the M&A space, project activity. The nice thing about it is it's pretty straightforward, particularly in the Middle East. The governments lay out their plans and they say, hey, here's what it looks like. Well, let me ask you, you know, maybe this is the last question. What does the market look like going forward? You mentioned that it's expected to sort of track how it's gone. What do you see, at least in the pipeline?
So in line with historical growth rates, we're seeing another 4.4 million cubic meters per day of plants under construction, and then at least 9 million cubic meters a day of late stage planning or planned projects. And if these new additions reach commissioning, this would represent about a 43% increase from where we are at now.
But that being said, are the project timelines always correct?
So with large-scale desal projects, we frequently see them stretch past the intended commissioning date. And, you know, with planned projects and the state of the world's water supply, more projects are likely to pop into this pipeline in the next couple of years.
Yeah, we put some research out a couple of months ago on the U.S. to say we may be at the end of the line, if there ever was a line. But really, like you said, seeing a little bit of it, we're definitely seeing activity in the Middle East. We might see a little bit in Australia going forward. There's some activity in China, but large-scale desal, it's, like you said, it's pretty consolidated at this point. People understand it without any great leaps and bounds cost-wise. It kind of faces a challenge where, you know, 10, 15 years ago, water reuse wasn't as big a deal as it might be now. If anything, that seems to be where a big focus is. That being said, it's still part of the portfolio of options for coastal cities, municipalities.
Yeah. And I think the push to have more of these plants be solar or renewable energy sourced could keep desal a little bit more competitive with reuse as it steps up, because we are seeing more of those super like mega plants with plans to have renewable energy, where in the past it's still fossil fuel based or electric. So that's a good thing, you know?
Oh, I think, I mean, all right, you got me started now, but I'll leave it at this. And that is, you know, we've talked with others within Bluefield about hydrogen. Is a hydrogen economy a growth opportunity for desal players, right? Where they can potentially go hand in hand. Hydrogen needs a clean raw water source. At the same time, they need power. That's one part of it. So talking renewables, but also, like you said, using solar or wind. And we have done that in the past where it's a little bit of an older report where we looked at large scale desal around the world and we tried to figure out, all right, well, how many of them are actually using solar on site? How many are just contracting out renewable power? And I know in the case of Australia, I think a couple of them are purchasing wind power as a way of offsetting their emissions and energy usage. So I think that's a really good point, and maybe that's a good place to end. But before I let you go, what else are you working on these days?
Right now, I am trying to figure out the private water ownership landscape in Texas. It's one of the largest markets right now for M&A of water and wastewater systems. And because there's so many small private systems, trying to figure out who actually owns the system, whether it's a small private owner or it's a subsidiary of one of the major IOUs. The landscape is pretty crazy. So we want to fully understand what's happening in Texas because it's such a hot spot. So I'm trying to build out a new data set of accurate owners.
Yeah, that'll be interesting and a good answer to a lot of the questions we have about it. Because like you said, a number of players are active in the Texas market, and even they don't all understand who owns what. And sometimes they're stepping on one another's toes by accident or by, you know, just by chance. So, all right. Well, with that being said, I will let you go and safe travels to DC. And thanks a million for taking the time.
Thanks, Reese.
All right. Take care. All right, there you have it. So thanks to Isabel for taking the time. I know there's a lot happening in the desal market. I know she's been spending a fair amount of time with some other people digging into all the details. So it's always good to hear more about that because I like desal. I'm not going to lie. It's interesting to see who the players are and what they're doing. Before we sign off, though, I'd like and beg and ask you to subscribe to The Future of Water and give us a review. Let us know what you think about it. We do this for you, not us. Send us a note at waterexperts@bluefieldresearch.com with any topic ideas you would like us to discuss. And lastly, tell a friend about it. It's always good to reach out and say hello. It's like the postcard of old. Now, everybody likes to receive a postcard, so if you're not going to do that, you can at least send them a idea for a podcast tip. So this podcast and these water industry insights have been brought to you by the one and only Bluefield Research. To learn more about us, visit us at bluefieldresearch.com. Till we talk again, be well, be safe, and take care.